We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
And Dawson will get a chance to do some damage. Look at this crowd coming to their feet. He has given them some year here, and these very appreciative fans, the Chicago and the Cardinal fans, are on their feet. Talented performer. You love to watch him. He's always hanging in there. Look at this.
Yeah, what a finale for Andre.
What a way to finish a year for the home folks in Chicago.
What a call right there from 1987, the MVP year of our next guest, as we welcome you back to Inside the Clubhouse alongside Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito, and we jump on out to the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
Our good friend Andre Dawson, the Hall of Famer, joining us on Inside the Clubhouse from Florida, where he is the Grand Marshal for a parade for Florida A&M University, his alma mater, and a busy week for Andre as well, as he'll be in Chicago, and he can talk about Fans for the Cure, awareness for prostate cancer coming up here. Andre, welcome to the show. Thanks for taking some time out today to talk about all that you're doing. You are a busy man. I would like to have your frequent flyer miles, if I can have those. Can you share some of those with me?
Yeah, I do. I get to move around quite a bit these days. And as you mentioned, I'm in Tallahassee, the Grand Marshal for a homecoming weekend. And it's been real exciting the last couple of days. And, you know, like I said, as you mentioned, I will be in Chicago, I think, this coming Wednesday.
Right. Talk a little bit about the honor they're giving you there before we get into some baseball talk. They're honoring you at Smith & Wolinski. It's a fundraiser. Our good friend Ed Randall, who came up with this years ago to make awareness for prostate cancer. And you are being honored along with Dr. Gonzalez from Loyola University as well. Talk a little bit about it and, you know, what's going on there.
Yeah, it's the event itself is a night on the river, of course, sponsored by Fans for the Cure. And as you mentioned, the two of us will be honored. I, as you may know or may not know, I'm a prostate cancer survivor since 2012. And I knock on wood because I'm to this day cancer free. The proceeds from the event will go to Fans for the Cure and its mission of promoting men's health awareness and supporting men who, and men and their families who are at all stages of their prostate cancer journey. And it's an event that I've grown to be very close to. It was founded by Ed Randall out of New York, and I've been pretty much associated with the project for a number of years now. I set out on this journey. Initially, I kind of refrained from, you know, disclosing my journey until Ed made an appearance in spring training, and this was during his spring training tour about 10 years or so ago. And during his lecture, it's at that time when I opted to just open up to the group that we were talking to and talk a little bit about my plight and my journey itself and make sure that, you know, they were aware that it's going to come a point in time when, you know, we're all going to have to be faced with the inevitable, and that is to go out and to be tested and to make sure that you, you know, have your health screenings.
Absolutely, Andre. The event is November 1st at Smith & Wolinski's, and again, it's called Fans for the Cure, and our listeners can check it out via the website and the email as well. So it's fansforthecure.org. Our listeners will certainly check it out. Andre, as we came in, and certainly great to talk to you, Andre Dawson, Cubs legend here on Inside the Clubhouse on the Score. We played that highlight of your final home run from your MVP season in 1987, and I'm sure that it's got to make you smile hearing that, and I know every time you come back to town, and I'm sure you'll see it Wednesday night when you're here at Smith & Walensky's, the Chicago fans really quickly and overwhelmingly positively adopted you as a Cub.
Yeah, it was incredible, unbelievable. The warmest reception, I think, you know, I got during the entirety of my career. And it was, you know, like it was a relationship that, you know, I put up there with the tops of anything that I ever accomplished in the game. And the fan base in Chicago, how they embraced me and allowed me to just enjoy the game again for what it was. Not that I wasn't having fun, but, you know, being a free agent, being in a new environment, a new setting, you don't immediately have your feet underneath you, but they allowed me to do that as a result of being a 10-year veteran. And it was just an overwhelming experience for me. And, you know, to this day, I realize, I've come to the realization that I've always been a Cub favorite. And, you know, I can't thank the fan base enough for, you know, how they, again, embraced me and allowed me to adopt Chicago as a second home.
Andre, staying with that mode, and I know you don't have any control over this, but I've talked to some people about the Hall of Fame and how a plaque is put up. And I know at the time when you went in, you wanted to have a Cub hat represent you, even though you were, you know, such a long-time Montreal Expo and so impactful on that franchise. But the reality was you wanted a Cub hat. At that time, the Hall of Fame did not allow players to decide what hat they would wear on their plaque for perpetuity. That has changed over the years. Is there any chance, and again, I've talked to some people about this, is there any chance that that could be redone and you could have your wish down the road here? Because I know your love for the Cub fans was such that you wanted to have that hat on as a part of your plaque in Cooperstown.
Well, Bruce, you know, I can go as far as saying this. I'm still addressing the matter to this day because I personally feel that as a result, it's now a double standard where players are allowed to not wear an emblem on their hat. And with the Hall making the decision to put me in as an Expo when they were fully aware that I wanted to sit down and discuss it moving forward before they made the decision to put the emblem on my cap. I just, you know, like I said, I'm to this day still kind of trying to see if I can get that changed. And there are many reasons why I want to do that. You know, I understand I had a 10-year career there. I'm very grateful and thankful for that opportunity. But it was just such a rebirth for me when I went to Chicago. And that's where I feel that the game for me was most enjoyable. I had a long career, a long tenure at the major league level, but I just, you know, feel that I should have had some sort of say-so moving forward, and the decision could have been made, in all honesty, at that particular time as opposed to how it was handled. And I think the Hall has always known my stance on this, and my mission is to get it reversed. I may, you know, there may not be anything done, and I may receive a lot of backlash as a result of my request. But, you know, so be it. I'm, you know, willing to stand up for what I believe in, and, you know, that's where we are at this particular point in time.
Andre Dawson is our guest here on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score, talking about the Hall of Fame. And Andre, certainly Cubs fans glad to hear that. And I want to bring you back, too, because you talk about the Hall of Fame, and you had a great major league career when you came to the Cubs in 87. the Cubs were down. They had a down year then, but then the young talent started coming. And one of the cool things this past year is we had both two of your former teammates, Sean Dunstan and Mark Grace, elected into the Cubs Hall of Fame. And that 1989 team, they both talked about it the weekend they were here in September. What a special group and what a tight group that was. What are your memories, your best memories from that 1989 season?
Well, we had two up-and-coming rookies who were battling it out for the Rookie of the Year awards, and they were instrumental being at the top of the lineup. And it was a young team with some veteran presence mixed in, and we were considered overachievers that year. I think we took the league by a storm, but we were a close-knit unit that performed well. And, you know, we had Don Zimmer, Popeye, who was field general. Like I said, we just went out, we played with reckless abandon, and we just, you know, took it to the opposition day in and day out. And come season's end, we found ourselves in a pennant race, and I think we were fueled by that. Obviously, yes, we came up short, but it was a very, very fun-filled eventful year, and people may, you know, say, well, we didn't belong there, but we felt that we did, and, you know, we just went out day and day and tried to play that way.
Hawk, when you look at the 2023 season and the rule changes, how do you think the game was impacted? Did you like the no-shifting rule? Do you think that impacted it, the bases, the pitch clock that going into effect? How did you perceive 2023 to the previous 4 or 5 years of baseball?
Well, I think it was a huge success, especially with the implementation of the pitch clock, speeding the game up. There were some changes that, you know, I kind of look at and I don't particularly like, but, you know, you tinker with the game and you try to make the game more conducive for the fans. I didn't really like the necessary enlarging of the bases, and now the guys have the added sliding pad. The shift, I think, brought maybe not much, but a little bit more offense into the game. And I just don't like the idea of tinkering with the game too much, because now you're getting involved with the history of the game. But I do feel the necessary changes going forward, it's to make the game a lot better, a lot faster. And some of it I like, other parts of it, I don't frown on it, but I wouldn't necessarily say that it's at the top of my list when it comes to making changes.
Last few minutes with Andre Dawson, Cubs legend and Hall of Famer here on Inside the Clubhouse on the Score. And Andre, as you watch the World Series, Texas with an exciting walk-off yesterday, and you talk about great clutch hitting and great clutch pitching and what it takes to make it and win the World Series. I'm curious, as a guy who played for such a long and storied career, when you think of toughest pitchers that you ever had to face in your career, who pops into your head immediately?
Wow. Well, there were a lot of those. depending on how you were swinging the bat, you know, they could make it very tough for you. And if you were swinging the bat well, you may have had your way with them on occasions. But I faced some of the greatest. I faced a lot of Hall of Famers. But the guy that probably jumps out to me right away is Bruce Sutter. I didn't really see a lot of Bruce. He was the premier reliever at that particular time. He brought the split thing into the game, something you had never seen. And when you don't see a guy a lot, it takes a little bit longer to make the adjustment to him. But I would say he's at the top of the list when it comes to the toughest.
Hawk, in closing with you, and again, Mike and I appreciate you coming on, talking a little bit about the fans for The Cure and the event next Wednesday at Smith & Wolinski. The number is 888-301-4414, 888-301-4414. Website www.fansforthecure.org. When you look at the Cubs in 2023, what stood out to you about the improvement in the team and where they're going right now?
Well, of course, you know, Swanson was the big news to sign in, the impact player that, you know, they wanted to sort of bring into the fold and lock him up. Cody Bellinger was on a one-year deal, and you didn't really know how that was going to play out, especially with him being a free agent. But to see the emergency of Nico Horner, Christian Morel came up, and, you know, he just took the league by storm after going down and working on some things prior to being at the big league level. There were great strides that were made, and, of course, management got the opportunity to see and now be able to address the needs going forward. It's a young and exciting mix group. You had Justin Steele, who kind of had a breakout year. And, of course, the other pitchers, when they were healthy, the starting pitching that is, they were very eye-opening in a sense. So I think, again, going forward, you know where we are as an organization and where we need to go. And I think a portion of that, if not all of it, is going to be addressed this offseason.
Hawk, we can't thank you enough. Congratulations on being the Grand Marshal there for Florida A&M, and also looking forward to seeing you this week at Smith & Wolinski for the event. Take care and have a great day. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Okay, thank you, Bruce. It's always a pleasure for me to be with you.
Take care. Andre Dawson, the great Hall of Famer, joining us to talk a little bit about our friend Ed Randall's event at Smith & Wolinski, the Fans for the Cure for prostate cancer and research. Again, the www.fansforthecure.org is where you can find information about getting tickets, supporting this great event, great cause. Mike, we have a lot more to do. We have a lot more to talk about. Chicago White Sox, World Series, everything off-season for both teams.
Absolutely. At the bottom of the hour, Tyler Kepner from The Athletic will join us. He's covering the World Series. We'll talk to him about that. We'll also talk to him about all the hot stove stuff that we're talking about. It's great to talk to the Hawk, and we will talk to you at 312-644-6767. We want to remember the career of Dusty Baker, who is retiring. We'll talk to you guys about that. And also, the White Sox have a new bullpen coach named Matt Wise. We'll get into that with the Sox fans next. This is Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse. Let's see what the Cubs and Sox are doing in the offseason.
Could tie it with one swing.
High drive! It's tied!
Corey Seager's blast in the bottom of the ninth tied game one last night, and Joe Davis called it a second before it happened on Fox TV. We thank them for that highlight. A second deck bomb for Seager. They eventually win the game 6-5 on a walk-off homer by Adolis Garcia. Welcome back in. It's Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine and Mike Esposito here with you. We are going to talk all things World Series next. Very quick reminder, first, tune in all day on Monday for your reaction to Bears Chargers. Yours truly will be live overnight from midnight till 5 a.m., followed by Mully and Haw, Bernstein and Holmes, then Parkins and Spiegel throughout your workday. Hang out with us on a Plumbers 911 Football Monday presented by Busey Bank and It's Not a Game, Illinois.com, right here on 670 The Score and the free Odyssey app. And now back to the World Series in baseball, and we jump on out to the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book.
And we bring in Tyler Kepner, one of the great writers at The Athletic, who will talk a little baseball with us and is and has expertise, Tyler, in many areas, but the World Series seems to be right in your wheelhouse every year. Welcome to the show. Great to have you on. What did you think of Game 1 last night?
Yeah, thanks, Bruce. Boy, it was a classic. I mean, it was a, you had all the elements of an upset kind of statement-making win by the Diamondbacks to, you know, grab at least a split here in Texas and put the Rangers on their heels a little bit. You know, they lost all their games here in the LCS, and that starts to creep in. But you had the big moments. You had Corey Seager. You had, Adolis Garcia with the walk-off. I mean, that's what we watch this stuff for, right? It's great to see. It's always fun to see the unsung heroes. But sometimes you just love to see superstars doing superstar stuff on the biggest stage, and that's what we saw last night.
And Garcia's walk-off, and Joe Davis said it on the broadcast, the legend grows or something to that effect. But, I mean, this guy, he's just been on a ridiculous tear for the last few weeks in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's the other, the other part of the Cardinal fans must be saying, my gosh, we had one Cuban outfielder we got rid of who did this a few years ago, and that was Randy Arozarena. And now they have another one with Adolis Garcia. I mean, a fellow former Cardinal, who never really got any traction in St. Louis and was let go, and he's been amazing. I mean, it's funny too because he's never up there to walk, but one of his at bats he thought he had walked, and on three balls. So we're like, what's going on here? And then of course he comes up with the big home run there off Castro to win it.
Tyler, the 162 game season, home field advantage, the idea that the long season is important, is that going by the boards in baseball now? And as we move toward expansion and the realignment of baseball teams, are we looking at a different type of world for baseball moving forward?
Well, maybe. I wouldn't draw too many big conclusions from this. I mean, if you flash back to the middle of the season in, let's say, June, the Rangers were one of the best teams out there, and the Diamondbacks were having a great year. They really fell off the pace, for a while. But for a lot of the year, they were really good, and they got their bullpen straightened out, as they went along. But you're right. I mean, they're 84 win team, and they were outscored for the season. I think these outliers are going to happen. They even happened in the era of just four playoff teams, right? The Minnesota Twins were outscored in 1987, and they didn't win 90 games, and they won the World Series, and it was a great story. Now they won something during the season. They won the division, and these teams didn't. But I think every now and then, this is just sort of the randomness that's baked into this this system, because if you're going to allow teams to spend whatever they want, you're going to have these big payroll disparities, and you need to have some avenue for the other kinds of teams that don't spend a ton of money to win. And the Diamondbacks, they took that route this year. It wasn't easy, but they earned their place here by beating two division winners and a very intimidating Phillies team.
Tyler Kepner of The Athletic is our guest here on Inside the Clubhouse on The Score. And Tyler, kind of in that vein, as you talk about, the multiple extra playoff teams and the newer playoff format with the extra wild card teams, and you get a series like this one, which, again, last night's game, super entertaining. Both have earned their ways here to the World Series. But you've got a pair of wild card teams in the World Series, whereas, the big dogs, the Atlanta Braves, the Dodgers, the teams that won 100 games, the Orioles, your big regular season successes are not here. They were upset early in the playoffs. What is your take on the current playoff format and as they've expanded it from 10 to 12 teams?
Well, I mean, there is some element that teams get a little stale, in those 4 days off, and they will all be playing a team in the division series that will come in hot because it's just won a wild card series and they've got the good vibes going and they've got a little bit of a roll, and that creates a little bit of a a little bit of an uneven playing field. The hope is that it's balanced out by the rest that you get and the ability to line up your starters. Just so happened this year, the Dodgers didn't really have any starters, when they opened that series. Kershaw was, compromised, and Bobby Miller and Lance Lynn were not the answer. So the Dodgers just weren't that good pitching wise. And, the Braves Phillies is always a tight matchup. I don't think that had a whole lot to do with the layoff. And the Astros ran the table last year as the number one team. So I don't know. I mean, I think they'll improve it or change it. Certainly whenever they get to 32 teams, cause then they can just do, eight divisions and just do the division champions. I don't know. It doesn't bother me too much, really.
Tyler, we're talking about Juan Soto today. I wrote a story on our website at 670thescore.com yesterday about Soto going to be out there for sure. The Padres looking to dump some money and also bring in some younger talent, more controllable talent. What are your thoughts about what that would be worth on the open market for a one-year buy-in for teams like the Cubs, a Soto, or possibly trading for an Alonso? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's tricky because, these guys are both Scott Boras clients and they'll be going to free agency. I mean, that's what that's a big reason why you hire Scott to go take you on the open market and work his magic. So, if you're going to be trading for these guys, you're only going to get them for 1 year, and you got to make sure this is a year when you think that it can make that huge difference. I'm sure they'll have a market for it. And anytime you have multiple suitors, that's going to raise the price. But, I don't think the Padres will come anything close to what they gave up to get him, because they were getting him for 3 Octobers, and the new team will only be getting him for 1. So, they'll get someone good. Maybe they'll just try to focus on the best single prospect they can find. But, I don't know. It does make sense from the Padres' perspective, because they went all in this year, and at some point they've got to start thinking not so much about finances, but just about talent down the road when some of these guys leave or get old.
Last few minutes with Tyler Kepner of The Athletic here on Inside the Clubhouse. And, Tyler, the other side of that Juan Soto coin for the Cubs and another Boras client, Cody Bellinger, one of the big free agents this offseason, had a wonderful year in a one-year deal with the Cubs. And I know, the affection on each side is mutual, but do you see Bellinger coming back to the Cubs, or is he going to be a Yankee or somewhere else by the time next year starts?
Well, my guess is he'll go to the highest bidder and whoever shows the most faith in him. And that really is what it will be, is a show of faith, because you don't have a track record of consistency over the years. And I think it'll say a lot about him if the Cubs really do make a very strong pursuit, because that'll show that the team that knows him best most recently thinks that this is real. And if the Cubs, kind of back off, that gives you some pause to think, well, what did they see that they don't think that this is real? So I don't know. I mean, I think you look at the highs with Cody Bellinger and they're really, really high. And if you think, that he's unlocked something that can make him more consistent, then I don't see why you don't, go for it, because he is a real difference making kind of player and he's very young. So, but that with Boras, he almost always finds that dollar figure somewhere. He finds an owner to make his case to successfully. And so, will that be the Cubs? They're going to have to spend a lot to find out. But I'm sure nobody in Chicago really cares how much the Ricketts make. They just want to win.
Tyler, my last question, and Mike and I really appreciate you joining us again today. I know you have coverage coming up for the World Series, so certainly appreciate that. But when you look at media coverage of the World Series now, I didn't know that Tom Verducci was a bench coach or Ken Rosenthal was a bench coach. You see them in the dugout now during the game. It's not even taped. So we have a new advent of live interviews while the game is going on with a manager. What are your thoughts about that? I think it's intriguing and interesting for fans. I wonder how teams and managers and players look at that?
Well, it's something that they, you know, that the league and the union agree to. So it's not like it's something that they, you know, is a intrusion that they have to, you know, just live with, because it's part of the deal. It's part of, you know, what's baked into Fox getting, you know, giving as much money as they do, spending as much money as they do to broadcast this is those special kind of rights and those to make the broadcast different. You know, it's weird. Some fans don't seem to like it, but I'm like, they're bringing the players right to you from the dugout. Like, why would you, you know, complain about it? I mean, you know, if the players all handle it courteously and fine. And if there's good nuggets to find out, they're going to come from smart questions from people like Verducci and Rosenthal. So I just see it as a win-win. As you know, it's not like they're just, like I said, just jumping out of the stands to run into the dugout. They have, this is all prearranged and they know about it. And I think it's cool. I think it's fun.
Would you like to see it during your season?
What's that?
Would you like to see it during the regular season?
Yeah, why not? I mean, I think it's if it adds to the broadcast and if it adds to the fans' experience and brings them a little bit closer to the players, why not? I think you just need to ask good questions. I've always felt that. Like, I mean, maybe you're going to get a little more of a rushed answer in a dugout setting, but I think most of the time, if you ask good questions, you'll get good answers. And I think it's neat. I think it's cool.
Tyler, I'm with you on that. Certainly, yep, appreciate that.
We do appreciate your time today, and I'll give you the I'll ask you one question before we go. What is your favorite Game 1 World Series game of all time? Because you have an expertise in a lot of areas. The World Series is one of them. Where would you go? Would you go all the way back to 100 years ago, or is it the Gibson game from 1988?
Yeah, I mean, that's the first one I think of, right? The Gibson game in 88. It's just, you know, I went back and watched, because as I'm watching this game last night, I kept thinking of a line that Scully said, not after the home run, but early in that Gibson at bat, where he said, "Not a bad opening act," and I kept thinking that, like, you know, this is a pretty good, not a bad opening act we got going on here. I don't know how it's going to finish, but not a bad opening act. So I'll go chalk and take that one. I mean, there are other good ones, but it's hard to top that, man. It's you know, Mike Davis walking with two outs. You know, yeah. He doesn't walk a 196 hitter. We never see Gibson come to the plate, but Eckersley faced 95 more batters in his postseason career, never walked anyone. But he walked Mike Davis to get to Gibson, and Gibson swung into history.
It's an amazing stat, and you are certainly one of the savants when it comes to World Series information. Tyler, thanks so much for joining me and Mike today, and enjoy the rest of the World Series. Again, it was great having you on Inside the Clubhouse. Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Tyler Koepner of The Athletic, we certainly enjoyed talking to him, and we're going to continue one more segment here, Bruce, as we do our Chicago-bound segment next, and we're going to continue our discussion of Juan Soto as we have been all season. I'd also like to bring in our old pal Dusty Baker into the conversation, as he is making news this week, as he has confirmed he will be retiring from managing. That's Bruce Levine. I'm Mike Esposito. You've got Inside the Clubhouse on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
I started this winter thinking about it, and then there were a couple instances, a couple articles, a couple things that kind of made up my mind, you know, in late summer. But, you know, that didn't have anything to do with tarnishing my job or anything like that, because I wanted to win, because that is, you know, I had a couple businesses, but nothing satisfies me like the thrill of competition and the quest to win. And it gave me an opportunity to, you know, to be a champion, even though I always felt like a champion. I just want to say thank you. You know, retiring from the field here in Houston, I haven't made up my mind yet what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go. First, I'm going to go home, talk to my daughter to think that she's my mother, and spend some time with my grandkids and let the Lord tell me where to go and what to do.
That's Dusty Baker, world championship manager with the Astros last season, announcing his retirement after this season, exit from the playoffs. And you've got Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Mike Esposito. And Bruce, I wanted to bring Dusty up. Obviously, a Hall of Fame career as a manager, great playing career. He's been in the game for 50 plus years now. But really, with his local connection, I thought his hiring by the Cubs in 2003 was a huge seismic shift for the Cubs organization. I remember being at that press conference, the welcome press conference that Dusty Baker had at Wrigley Field, and I'm sure you were there as well. But it just seemed like a massive, massive event. It was as if they had hired the king of baseball.
Well, he was a great manager and a great person in baseball history, a terrific ball player, certainly be remembered for an awful lot of things, including being on deck waiting to hit when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record back in 1974, hitting 715 in Atlanta. But, you know, his manager career was certainly solidified last year by finally winning a World Series. He was a Hall of Fame manager before that. I'm wishing him nothing but seashells and balloons going forward. At 74 years old plus, just still getting it done, getting his team to the ALCS every year since he stepped back in there with Houston, giving them tremendous credibility, Mike, after that scandal broke out and Houston was in shambles as far as credibility goes, as well as the idea that, you know, they were booed for a long time. Dusty was the right man, the perfect guy moving forward. Just a terrific individual to deal with. I enjoyed all 4 years of Dusty being here, continue to be friends with him. And that leads us to, you know, the last couple of moments on the show, Mike, and the managerial wheel is turning. There are six jobs that are open for managers, and we're approaching the general managers meetings here only 10 days away. In Scottsdale, Arizona, six teams. Houston now with Baker gone. San Diego now that Melvin has moved to the Giants. Cleveland now that Tito has retired from the Indians. Milwaukee has given Craig Counsell the permission to look at all these other jobs. He will likely not be back there. The New York Mets fired Buck Showalter. The Angels fired Phil Nevin. I can never remember six jobs being open this late after the World Series or after the season has ended, almost a month in, and all these openings. So it's going to be intriguing here over the next few weeks after the World Series ends to see who jumps into some of these new jobs.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Counsell already being given permission to interview elsewhere. I saw that he interviewed with the Mets this past week. And really, when you look at it, too, some huge, some big market jobs. I mean, the Astros job is a great big market job. The Angels, the Mets, goes without saying, one of the biggest jobs in baseball. So some not so small openings there, which will be some important decisions to make by these organizations, certainly as to who they hire to manage their teams.
We have people to thank today, including always Sean Sears, who does a terrific job of producing our show. Of course, Andre Dawson, the Hawk Hall of Famer, joined us to talk about the event, Fans for the Cure, at Smith & Wolinski on Wednesday night. We appreciate Tyler Kepner from The Athletic. Mike, terrific job. We're expecting our friend David Haw to join us for his perspective again next week, and join us in the future every Saturday for Perspective. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Mike, I will talk to you next Saturday.
Sounds great, Bruce. Looking forward to that. Bruce just thanked our guests, and Sean Sears, great job as always. Coming up next here, we have Saturday Suckage. Our friend Steve Rosenblum will talk to Mark Rohde. He'll talk to Hub Arkish. He'll talk to Ricky O'Donnell. Talk Bears, talk Cubs, Sox, Bulls, everything Chicago sports. That's coming up next here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
670 The Score and 670thescore.com. And always live on the free Odyssey app, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
I started this winter thinking about it, and then there were a couple instances, a couple articles, a couple things that kind of made up my mind, in late summer. But that didn't have anything to do with tarnishing my job or anything like that, because I wanted to win. Because that is, I had a couple businesses, but nothing satisfies me like the thrill of competition and the quest to win. And it gave me an opportunity to be a champion, even though I always felt like a champion. I just want to say thank you. Retiring from the field here in Houston, I haven't made up my mind yet what I'm going to do or where I'm going to go. First, I'm going to go home, talk to my daughter that thinks that she's my mother, and spend some time with my grandkids and let the Lord tell me where to go and what to do.
That's Dusty Baker, world championship manager with the Astros last season, announcing his retirement after this season, exit from the playoffs. And you've got Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Mike Esposito. And Bruce, I wanted to bring Dusty up. Obviously, a Hall of Fame career as a manager, great playing career. He's been in the game for 50 plus years now. But really, with his local connection, I thought his hiring by the Cubs in 2003 was a huge seismic shift for the Cubs organization. I remember being at that press conference, the welcome press conference that Dusty Baker had at Wrigley Field, and I'm sure you were there as well. But it just seemed like a massive, massive event. It was as if they had hired the king of baseball.
Well, he was a great manager and a great person in baseball history, a terrific ball player, certainly be remembered for an awful lot of things, including being on deck waiting to hit when Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's record back in 1974, hitting 715 in Atlanta. But, his manager career was certainly solidified last year by finally winning a World Series. He was a Hall of Fame manager before that. I'm wishing him nothing but seashells and balloons going forward. At 74 years old plus, just still getting it done, getting his team to the ALCS every year since he stepped back in there with Houston, giving them tremendous credibility, Mike, after that scandal broke out and Houston was in shambles as far as credibility goes, as well as the idea that, they were booed for a long time. Dusty was the right man, the perfect guy moving forward. Just a terrific individual to deal with. I enjoyed all 4 years of Dusty being here, continue to be friends with him. And that leads us to, the last couple of moments on the show, Mike, and the managerial wheel is turning. There are six jobs that are open for managers, and we're approaching the general managers meetings here only 10 days away. In Scottsdale, Arizona, six teams. Houston now with Baker gone. San Diego now that Melvin has moved to the Giants. Cleveland now that Tito has retired from the Indians. Milwaukee has given Craig Counsell the permission to look at all these other jobs. He will likely not be back there. The New York Mets fired Buck Showalter. The Angels fired Phil Nevin. I can never remember six jobs being open this late after the World Series or after the season has ended, almost a month in, and all these openings. So it's going to be intriguing here over the next few weeks after the World Series ends to see who jumps into some of these new jobs.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Counsell already being given permission to interview elsewhere. I saw that he interviewed with the Mets this past week. And really, when you look at it, too, some big market jobs. I mean, the Astros job is a great big market job. The Angels, the Mets, goes without saying, one of the biggest jobs in baseball. So some not so small openings there, which will be some important decisions to make by these organizations, certainly as to who they hire to manage their teams.
We have people to thank today, including always Sean Sears, who does a terrific job of producing our show. Of course, Andre Dawson, the Hawk Hall of Famer, joined us to talk about the event, Fans for the Cure, at Smith & Wolinski on Wednesday night. We appreciate Tyler Kepner from The Athletic. Mike, terrific job. We're expecting our friend David Haw to join us for his perspective again next week, and join us in the future every Saturday for perspective. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com. Mike, I will talk to you next Saturday.
Sounds great, Bruce. Looking forward to that. Bruce just thanked our guests, and Sean Sears, great job as always. Coming up next here, we have Saturday Suckage. Our friend Steve Rosenblum will talk to Mark Rohde. He'll talk to Hub Arkish. He'll talk to Ricky O'Donnell. Talk Bears, talk Cubs, Sox, Bulls, everything Chicago sports. That's coming up next here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.